For the first time in a long time, we are back again with the Let Me Be Frank podcast. We're going to call it season 4, episode 1, because we've been doing this for so darn long and it doesn't make sense to start over, but it's a whole new format. If you've been listening lately, you've been hearing the Monday shows that are the weekend recap with myself and Sam Norland. Wednesdays are going to be a more interview-based episode, which is what you're getting here on Wednesday, January the 9th. And then Fridays, coming soon, Fridays, 5-Minute Fridays, just breaking down a topic of our choice to set you up and get you into the weekend. But today I'm joined by none other than our very own Nick Sergis. He is here. He is ready to talk about some Bears football. Wish it was under better circumstances. I had this planned that after the first playoff win, we were going to have you on, and then we'd be talking, what do we need to do to prepare for LA round 2? And that's just not where we are right now.
I was sitting there inside Soldier Field at halftime, and I turned behind me to the random person wearing a Bears jersey and said, what time do I book my flight to Los Angeles? I'm going to this game.
Yep.
And they said, son, you have not been a Chicago sports fan long enough if you don't think somehow, some way, this is not going to go our way. And sure enough, the clock strikes midnight on our beloved Bears. I still can't even sit here and say it was a fun year. I'm just so down in the dumps.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to go.
Yeah, let's start with that. Coming into the season, I think some people had high expectations. I certainly wouldn't say mine were high. They were high in terms of what we'd seen for the past 3-4 years under John Fox. But I thought 8-8 was a great year. If they can get that, some consistency from Mitch, you know, the defense to take a step forward, we'd be set. And then a guy named Khalil Mack comes to town. And all of a sudden, you're looking at one of the premier pass rushers, but also passing pass rushing defensive lines in the entire NFL. And then week one happens, and they're dominating Green Bay. And all of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers does his thing, and they lose week one. But then I think expectations rose from there. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right. So that's a great place to start. If you think about the entire landscape of the NFL, there's only so many players that do not play the quarterback position that can genuinely change the course and alter a team season.
Yep.
That list is probably no greater than 5, and Khalil Mack is one of those 5. So
exactly.
That will forever be the silver lining here is that 4 months ago, we did not think we were going to be playing playoff football at home, nonetheless. And to get him, it obviously just shows the course of it. I think the silver lining, he's here, the defense is locked up, the core at least. So that's obviously fantastic. But yeah, you go and you look at that Green Bay game and you're saying to yourself, a whirlwind of emotion that, hey, we never win at Lambeau. Now we're winning by 3 scores. I can't believe what's happening. Only to have our hearts ripped out from underneath us yet again. But that changed the entire landscape of the year. Because I think if you listen to Nagy post-game on Sunday, he said that locker room felt the same after that Eagles game that it did week one against Green Bay. So you knew, even though they lost that game, and I don't believe in moral victories in the NFL. You have to win football games. But that definitely turned the tide and opened their eyes. Like, hey, we can compete. We are very good. We're good enough to win a lot of football games.
Right.
And they did that. They did that to larger than any of our expectations.
Yeah, and I think that I'm going to use a terrible parallel, but moving the goalposts, if you will, for this team is
absolutely,
you know, exactly what needed to be done, because you were expecting a second-year quarterback still learning the ropes and, you know, a defense that was top 10 last year, but we didn't expect to take that big a leap to become number one, even with Khalil Mack, you know, even with him only playing a half and things like that. And I think that's what gets lost in the shuffle a little bit, is people are now looking back and saying, oh, well, you know, in September, we didn't expect to be here. It's like, yeah, but after week one, you know, there were kind of these expectations. And sure, through 6 games, the Bears were 3-3. Yeah, they had the terrible loss to Miami. They were 3-3, beat the Jets, I think, in week 6, and then just went on a roll following the bye week. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, you beat LA, and you're like, holy shit, we might be able to get a first-round bye.
Right. That's what's going to get lost in the shuffle in January, because it's going to take a couple weeks for it to set in and everybody to sit back and really reflect on the season. Because, right, when you're sitting there at 3-3, you're looking at the schedule saying, how can we sneak in 9-7? Yep. Not in your wildest dreams do you think you're going 12-4 playing week 17 for a first round bye, right?
Right. So
you have absolutely not anybody's wildest imagination. And that's a credit to Pace. That's a credit to Nagy. It's a credit to all these coaches. It's a credit to the players. I mean, to go 3-3. And I think I saw a stat that all five games were lost by a combined like 15 points or something.
Yes.
So even when you're not winning games, there was never a quarter of football this year that was deemed unmeaningful. And if you reflect on the past half decade, it's hard to find meaningful quarters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously been a culture change. There's obviously been some momentum created for the better. But obviously, it just still stings, and that's what's going to get lost immediately in the shuffle. But come OTAs, come preseason, there's going to be a lot of buzz around this team, and rightfully so. They earned it. They won 12 games in the NFL. It's very hard to do, especially in year one of a coach. And you look and you get excited at the pieces coming back and everything, but there's just so much heartbreak because it's the NFL. We talked about this a little bit off the podcast, but when you get there in football, it's not like basketball. It's not like baseball. It's not seven games in a series.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to that spot, you're just not promised that you're going to be back here. And you have to capitalize when you're there.
Yeah.
And when you have a home playoff game, you kind of put all the narrative to we weren't supposed to be here aside. And you assume, hey, we got to go win this. That's what happens when you get home playoff games. And unfortunately, it just didn't go our way.
And it's just what good teams do. You know, they find a way even when their, you know, their best play pieces aren't performing well. And that's kind of what the Bears did all season, which is why it definitely hurts as much. I'll throw this out to you. I've been hearing a lot of 2015 Cubs comparisons, and you kind of touched on it already. But I hate that. I absolutely hate that because I think it lulls people into a sense of security. If you look at next year's schedule, 6 of the 16 opponents were playoff teams this year, and that's 0 of the teams from the NFC North. So 6 games against playoff teams, then you've got your 6 NFC North games, and then there's 4 others against teams that are decent at best. I mean, the Raiders, I genuinely do think the Raiders can make a turnaround. I thought they were significantly better than they played this year, but I mean, that's a hard schedule, especially for a team that all of a sudden has high expectations when no one expected him to be here 4 months ago.
Right. So, correct. When you now go from the team chasing everybody tonight and have the target on your back, it's an entirely different game.
Yep.
But what I hate about that comparison, and this, I guess, it's just a football cliche, is that there's no other game like it in the sense where you play one game. You play 4 quarters. The Cubs played 162. Eventually, the cream's going to rise to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you struggle for 2 or 3 games in the postseason in the series, you still have a chance to dig yourself out. You play one game in football because it's amazing when you look at these Alabama, the Clemson, the Patriots, how they get back there every year. And everybody just thinks, hey, that's going to be my team. It's not how it works. There's been a handful of those teams throughout the course of the entire game. It's just so hard to get back there. And when you look at it, yeah, it's a very hard schedule. It's going to be that way. But this team, the black cloud over them is when you look at this season, if you were to tell me who the 5 losses were going to be against, you wouldn't tell me they'd be against Miami.
Yep.
You wouldn't tell me they'd be against the Giants.
Yep.
Right? You wouldn't tell me they'd be against these bottom tier teams. And so it's going to be difficult when you have that target on your back, and we're going to see how they respond all winter.
I think the mantra of this season is going to be just missed opportunities. And that's what sucks the most.
Absolutely.
Because it was a great year. This is probably the best Bears team we've seen since the Super Bowl run in 05. This,
right.
And all I can think of is all the missed opportunities. You know, what if the defense just didn't collapse in Miami? What if Kevin White gained 1 extra yard against the Patriots? What if Mitch wasn't hurt against the Giants, or, you know, they actually ran an offensive drive in that overtime? All these things just bubble back up. But it kind of leads us perfectly into the game on Sunday. Neither team played particularly well. I thought the Bears' defense was good, not great, not as good as we've seen them. That's a credit to the Eagles' offensive line and really just their game plan. Felt a lot like Foles was just kind of throwing up some balls, but they have the receivers and the playmakers to make plays like that. And a weakness all year has been our man-to-man coverage, especially Kyle Fuller, and he got exposed on Sunday.
Yeah, he got exposed in a big way, and of course, logically, it would be against Alshon, who ran his mouth all week and couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't stop rubbing it in our face that he has a Super Bowl ring and now just went for over 100 yards against us in a playoff win. But agreed, Kyle Fuller wasn't his best day. He has to tune that skill up in the offseason. That's his one area, that bump and run coverage, where he kind of just gives you 6-7 yards. You got to know Alshon Jeffrey's not going to run by anybody.
Right.
He's not that guy. He wasn't that guy for us. You have to know that. I thought for sure, having gone up against him in practice, gone up against him in training camp every day for a couple of years, maybe he would have the formula to shut him down. And Alshon still, to this, he's not a top 15, top 10 receiver in the NFL anymore.
Not
he's not that guy. So I was surprised that he had that big of a day. But the two areas for me, if we're going to talk missed opportunities, and I think that you obviously can point to the Cody kick, but I won't be the thousandth guy to do that. There's two scenarios for me that they should have won the football game, if not help themselves considerably out.
Okay.
Number one would have been early in the first half. I believe it was the second or third series in the game where we were punting. They went offside, so O'Donnell got the punt again and pinned them right at the one.
Yep.
We force a three and out like a good defense should do in that scenario.
94 missed a tackle in the end zone there, too, just prior to that.
94 missed that safety, yep. And we get the ball at the 48-yard line of Philadelphia, okay?
Yep.
How on God's green earth, coming out of a timeout, do you draw up a screen pass for Tyquan Mizell?
Yeah.
When Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard are healthy is beyond me. When you get the ball at the 48-yard line, you need two first downs and you're going to score points. Or you should score points.
Exactly.
Right? I don't know how on earth that's such a missed opportunity to start a drive, have the entire timeout to rehearse and talk about your plays, and to come out and lay a three and out egg because you're throwing the ball to your third string running back, who I have no idea why he's even on the field in the first place.
100% right? agree.
And then you saunter up, right? You have to the Trey Burton stuff, which we'll get into later, but now you're throwing shovel passes to Ben Broniker. You're so out of sync. They didn't look good all day on offense. The second one for me, you're up by 5 points in the fourth quarter. You got a big stop. There's about 5 minutes left.
Yep.
You have the ball up 5 points. Go get two first downs. You're going to win the football game because number one, you're going to punt and give the ball back to them, but they're going to be pinned on a 5 to 10 yard line.
Right.
Or you're going to get first downs, you're going to run off the clock, you're going to give Jordan the ball, you're going to get 3 yards of carry, and you're going to be fine, you're going to win the game. You have to get a first down there. That's where you have to win the football game. And we were stuck in 3rd and 9 like we were all day, came up with a terrible pass, and then Pat O'Donnell shanks the punt.
Yep.
Right? So if you get two first downs there, the football game's over, you're going to Los Angeles.
Right.
But instead, you give the ball right back to him in great field goal, in great field position, and your punter shanks the punt, which he hasn't done all day. So that's when the dominoes started to fall. If you can point to two areas for me, those two offensive drives were so bad, so terrible, and I don't know where the blame has to fall, but somebody's got to be held accountable for those two drives because, again, you get points on one of them,
that's
you're
the
in a
game
better
right
spot.
There.
And number right, and number two, you just run off the clock, you win the game. So those two drives for me, you want to talk missed opportunities, those were two of the biggest ones for me.
Yeah, so I'm 100% with you on that last drive. I remember the first half drive. I didn't mark it down as one of the bigger ones, although you're 100% right. That last drive, Nagy had that secondary figured out. Why are we not running one double move, get the ball towards midfield like we did the entire fourth quarter with Allen Robinson, who it's all going to get lost in the shuffle again. He had an unbelievable day. He had 100 yards receiving in a playoff game, which is like the third time in Bears history that's ever happened.
Yep.
He was great, and I don't get why you have to be somewhat aggressive. This is the guy that's, you know, the offensive guru, the offensive mind. He's known for taking his risks, and I feel like every time he takes the risk, he does it at the wrong time.
Yeah, again, you can go back, and I think a fair criticism of him right now as a play caller is if you draw back to the Kansas City days, you look last year and how he gets a little tight in January.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be as loose as possible. You know, for example, you go to those two-point conversion plays, all year they were working for us, right? The Tariq Philly special, the Santa Slate going to an offensive line. the moment of truth, the one that you needed 2 yards, you didn't have a go-to play where you had to substitute Khalil Mack. Only one person ran with them because they knew it wasn't the play. You come up short there. But yeah, you're 100% correct. And I think the number one thing that this falls back to that I think I'm a little bit more upset about than a lot of people, I need some closure on Trey Burton.
Yeah,
I need
big time.
Some closure on what happened here, because I'm telling you 100%, as somebody who played the game, as somebody who knows how these coaches do it, Matt Nagy had a script that he was going to run, and he was going to call plays all day, right? You saw the first drive.
Yeah.
We threw a shovel pass to Broniker. That's Trey Burton's ball. He did not script and say, okay, we're going to get Ben the ball right here. That ball, that play is in the script because AD's healthy. Okay. All day long, Tariq's supposed to get good. Tariq didn't get the ball more than 4 times, right?
Yep.
He's supposed to play off, or Trey Burton's supposed to have. That's a game where he's supposed to have 5 catches for 55 yards and a couple big third and that, right? That's just the game that he's supposed to have. You're a multi-million-dollar guy for us.
Exactly.
I need some answers there, because where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't believe for 1 second that in walkthroughs, this guy messed up his groin a little bit. My gut tells me that it was something outside of football, because that is absolutely unbelievable that nobody would have known this until the day of the game. You don't just wake up
yeah.
as a pro athlete who invests hundreds of thousands of dollars into your body and say, ooh, sorry, coach, my groin's locked up. That doesn't just happen.
Yeah, that was the most troubling thing to me. And now all these post-game interviews with him, and it's like, oh, wow, you know, it's so brave of him to speak out on, like, how well he knows his body and all this stuff. First
right.
off,
come on,
saying I know my body, I know when I can go and I can't go, is exactly what the kid who never wanted to be in the game and never wanted to play in the clutch situation
right.
did growing up. That we all knew that kid. He never wanted to be anywhere near the ball. That's not what you
right.
want, and that's not what you need, especially when you're paying so much money for a guy that showed that he has ability.
Absolutely. Absolutely inexcusable, in my opinion, because if there was some sort of health issue, you need to know about that farther in advance. He hadn't
yeah.
had this problem all season. I refuse to believe that he just woke up and his groin was all locked up.
Mm-hmm.
But then, staying on the same topic of injuries, clearly Eddie Jackson was not healthy.
Yeah.
Clearly Eddie was not healthy. I actually thought Deion Bush played a really good game, probably as good a game as he can give you.
Yeah.
There were a couple big runs where he came up and absolutely stuck.
He had some
Smallwood
big hits.
And some of those guys. Right. He was absolutely laying the hammer. He gave you probably his best game, but you don't know. A couple of those Nick Foles balls that we forced to just go up in the air, you have no idea what happens if Eddie's out there.
Yeah.
He just is a magnet for the football. He knows where to find a ball. So clearly he wasn't healthy. I saw that the strategy was, if we need him to go, he'll go. Clearly that wasn't the case, because this is the playoffs.
Yeah.
You need him to go, so he should be out there if he's healthy. So he clearly wasn't healthy. That sprained ankle, that was the slide. I think that was in the Green Bay game, right?
I think so, yeah, on the interception late.
Yeah. Yep, clearly that was clearly something that bothered him. It was nice, though, to see a couple young guys like Roquan make a big play.
Yeah.
Adrian Amos, could have been his last game as a Bear. We might get into that later. But you'd like to see some of those young guys who aren't big money guys necessarily step up in a big way on defense. And again, Allen Robinson, we
huge
haven't
game.
Had a number one receiver in Chicago in years, probably since we went out and signed Moose and Muhammad, and that didn't even turn out well.
There hasn't even
for
been
him
a
to show
receiving
up with double digit catches. Right. No, there's been nothing. There has been guys out there who have limited use of their motor skills trying to catch the football, and have a guy out there with 10 catches, 130 yards, the biggest catch of the game. I mean, that was an unbelievable
yeah.
pitching catch from Mitch to him. And it was unbelievable to see him step up in a big way just like that. The other guy who had a really good game, who out of nowhere, because if you would have told me I'd be saying this a year ago, I'd have told you I was crazy. I thought Josh Bellamy played really well.
Yeah. He had a great
Josh
season,
Bellamy
I thought.
Played his, might have, absolutely. That might have been his best game as a Bear yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? And then another one of these just makes you want to drown yourself. The NFL needs to fix this catch rule.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL needs to fix this catch rule. That could be the most obscene rule I think in the entire world, in between Dez Bryant, the Steelers tight end last year against New England,
yep,
we've seen about 100 of them. That might be the most ridiculous rule in the playbook.
And people forget that the Calvin Johnson play at Soldier Field that would have won the Lions the game is really what started this whole thing.
Right, absolutely. The Peanut Tillman, Calvin Johnson fade started this entire thing. How you can say, well, he caught it, but we blew it dead before somebody can recover it. Well, then the play's just
dead.
So then
it's a catch.
I mean,
the catch and the play is dead.
Right. Then it's first and goal at the five. Right? So, there you have to look. You're like, oh, my goodness, there's 7 points instead of three. It's just there's so many of these things. And a lot of people come back and say, well, you can't do that in football. Every play the new play. When you lose, you can do all of this because it's all fair. These guys get paid so much money, you can do everything. And there was a huge contingent of people out there saying, oh, Khalil Mack didn't play his best game.
He was great.
He was great. He changes the entire game plan for that offense to allow people like Akeem, like Roquan, like Robertson Harris to get in the backfield, to do a lot of things and create opportunities to make plays. He was awesome. He put a couple balls up. He got in Foles' face, and he threw a couple balls where you're sitting there like, just get it. Hit the ground, and you're dodging bullets again. So there's so many things you can point back to. The Miller catch, the two drives we talked about, the Parkey kick. I mean, that is where if you're one of those people who do believe when we get back here next year we'll be more experienced, that's where you hopefully learn to realize that playoff football is a completely different game than it is in the regular season, that those plays are all under a microscope, and whoever makes them wins, and whoever doesn't make them loses. They made them, and they made them at the most opportune times. We held them on first and goal, held them on second and third. You stop them on fourth and goal, there's your game.
Right.
Great play call, Golden Tate, the guy they went out and signed. That's awesome. Another place where injuries come back to haunt you, probably would love to have Bryce Callahan
big time
out there.
Big time.
Right, you'd love to have Bryce instead of Sherrick out there, but there's just so
many
three plays. Oh, he did. Again, him and Deion Bush probably gave you their two best games that they could. Philly's got a really good receiving corps.
Yeah.
A very good receiving corps. Nick Foles is touched by the hand of God, I guess, but you've seen in playoff games where that guy goes for 400 yards and four touchdowns. That did not happen on Sunday.
No.
He was locked down for the better part of that entire game. That's a credit to Fangio. It's a credit to the secondary. And it's just a credit for building depth. I give Ryan Pace some credit for that.
Yeah, and then the last little bit before we move on to the next season outlook, I guess I'll say, or the off season. I don't want to mention I do want to mention it, but I don't want to dive in. The defensive drive where they went 83 yards and scored, which 53 yards were aided by penalties, one of them a third down personal foul by Adrian Amos. I mean, that's probably the second worst drive the defense has had all year. And it sucks that it comes in a playoff game, but that's just sometimes how it works. But my big thing, you touched on it earlier, but Tariq Cohen, if this is the guy that you want to, you know, design the offense around, by all means do it. He's a playmaker. Teach him to run upfield more often than not, because I feel like every single time I see him, he thinks they're on a rugby pitch and that out of bounds is like 15 yards away and all of a sudden he's there. But four touches is way too little. In the few touches he had, he was impactful. The kick return gave the offense a chance to even win the game. You know, it was an unbelievable play. I don't know why they haven't had him back there returning kicks all year. But I think if he can take a step next year, be more decisive in where he wants to go and really get upfield, find gaps and go, play more like Jordan Howard, but with speed, he's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, he'll absolutely be dangerous. And I think the one thing that you have to point to is you look around the league and you realize that when you design the offense around flash and not fire, it comes back to bite you in the ass. And I think you look at Sunday, when we didn't have our little speed guy, our big play guy who's going to create all this, this goes to show you why every Chicago person all year was frustrated that Jordan Howard was not getting his touches because you couldn't run the ball at all.
Right.
You could not run the ball. And when everything for some reason went haywire with Tariq, you had no answer to what to do in the ground game. And I think that you either have to stay with him or you have to somehow give Jordan the ball more. But It's inexcusable. Nagy got asked by a reporter post-game, and I don't know if you caught this, but the guy basically grilled him and said, "Hey, Matt, do you think it's a good idea Tariq got the ball four times?" And Nagy got really passive-aggressive with him. And he goes, "No, do you think it's a good idea?" And right. The reporter's like, "No, I'm asking you. You're the head coach.
Right.
You have to get Tariq Cohen cannot touch the ball four
I think
times.
He followed up even right? with, like, how many touches do you think he should have? And all he said was more than that.
Right, that's the equivalent to if you are, like, make another parallel to another sport. If you're the Golden State Warriors, Kevin Durant's going to shoot the ball 15 times at bare minimum. He's going to get 15 shots bare minimum.
And he should.
Right? Absolutely. LeBron's going to shoot the ball 20 times because he should.
Yep.
Tariq Cohen needs to have the football in his hand at least 10 times a game.
Yep.
Because you have to just be patient. You have to be patient, and then he's going to break one off. But to not get him involved in that game. And then for him to come out and return that kick to the 50-yard line, the 40-yard line, was basically a slap in the face with 56 seconds left.
Right.
Being like, "Hey, Matt, probably get me the ball a couple times." If you're him, imagine if you're him, you've had this breakout season, you're a Pro Bowl football player, and we come out and we run screen passes to Mizell out of timeouts. Why are Benny Cunningham and Taquan Mizell in the football game on offense? It's inexcusable to have those guys in and not have Tariq getting his touches. Again, another loophole in the game plan. I don't know if that's Jim Schwartz taking your best player away. I don't think it is.
I think if you look at
Jim Schwartz's track record, he's a good defensive coordinator. He isn't Bill Belichick. He's not one of these guys like Wade Phillips who's going to just take your best player away. I don't see how Tariq doesn't get the football at least 10 times. Because like you said,
right,
it's inexcusable. He's taken so many steps to get so many leaps. And it all, unfortunately, in the NFL, when you get to that playoff game, whatever has happened before that is irrelevant. It goes out the window. It doesn't mean anything. That game is all that matters. And to have him only touch the ball four times, I think, it's a disgrace.
Yeah, and he's not like these backs I'm about to mention, but these teams know that they need these guys to be successful to win. Dallas needs Zeke to get going to win. The Colts need Marlon Mack to get going to win, and they both did that, and they won their games. the recipe is simple if you look at it.
Right. If you look at the game last night, right, Clemson's moving the ball. They throw the ball all over the place. Devil Sweeney knows, hey, Travis Etienne's got to touch the ball. He's got to touch the ball. 24 rushing yards in the first half. They give it to him in the third quarter, still getting stuff. Big third down, give it to your man. 50-yard run down the side. You just have to give these guys the ball and trust the fact, hey, if you give him enough opportunities, he's going to break one, right? Kansas City gives Tyreek Hill the football. They take 4 or 5 shots every game and play the odds, right? We're going to catch one of these and it's going to be big. You have to give Tariq Cohen the football. It's inexcusable.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that's like the perfect spot to wrap up this season. You know, it's just missed opportunities. That's all you can chalk it up to. And I hope we're laughing about this next year, you know, on our way to wherever the Super Bowl is and saying, God, you know.
Really fast. Let me get your opinion on this really fast.
Yeah.
Grade Mitch. Grade Mitch on a letter grade scale on Sunday.
I'll give him a B, just a straight B. I thought he was rough in the first quarter, but his fourth, you know, the things you wanted to see from him, the late drives, the 2-minute drills, things like that, he was unbelievably poised and capable. That's all I needed to see from him.
I agree with that. I would lean a little bit higher, just like a B plus, A minus grade, just because we've been extremely critical of that game-winning drive type Mitch.
Yeah.
Right? How many times have we joked and gone back and forth and said, we have never seen this guy when a game's on the line give us a chance to win. He gave us a chance to win. If you tell Mitch Trubisky before, if you tell anybody before the game and you say, hey, Mitch Trubisky's going to throw for 300 yards and a touchdown and he's not going to turn the ball over once, I would have taken out a second loan on the mortgage and bet it all on the Bears. If you would have told me he has a 300-yard passing game and one touchdown,
I don't
see how we lose that. Right. That is as good as Mitch Trubisky can give you that day.
And say the Eagles only score 16 points.
Right. I saw a stat that day that said no other quarterback had 300 passing yards in wildcard weekend. It's a pretty good quarterback played this past weekend. So it's one of the guys who's probably more critical than Mitch than anybody. I got to tip my hat to him. I thought he gave you as good a chance to win as he's given up all season. But again, missed opportunities and inopportune times, you're not going to win playoff games.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. But now we've got to look towards next year, unfortunately, already. A lot sooner than we would have liked. But there is a lot of continuity, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But there are some big pieces everywhere. I'm going to list you five names. I want to know who you want back and who you want to see go. And okay. keep money in mind. Keep everything in mind. What you think they're going to command. Things like that. Adrian Amos. Yep. Bobby Massey.
Probably.
Bryce Callahan. Roy Robertson-Harris. And Brian Witzman.
Okay.
So we'll start with Amos. Yeah.
Start with Amos. I'm a big Adrian Amos guy. Unfortunately, I don't think you can bring him back. I don't think you can bring him back, unfortunately. I think he's going to demand a little too much money.
Yep.
And again, after seeing what Deion Bush gave you, let's hypothetically say you don't make another move at safety. You don't want to invest more money. You don't want to go get Landon Collins and pay him, right?
Right.
If my safety number two is Deion Bush, I think I'm okay with that. I think I'm very much okay with that. If we're allocating money elsewhere, right. I think I'm fine with Deion Bush being my second safety and not having to pay more money to Amos. But again, that's not knocking Adrian Amos. I thought he played awesome on Sunday. I thought it was great all year. But financially speaking, it's business. I don't think you can bring back Amos.
Yeah, so I guess I'll flip the number two and number three guys. Bryce Callahan, I think it's one or the other, to be honest with you. I think it's either him or Amos, and I really do think they should keep Bryce over him. Because of what you've got at corner right now, there's no shutdown corner. I mean, sure, you can look at Kyle Fuller's seven interceptions and say that's great. Prince Amukamara was the most penalized player on the team this year. He's a bump and run guy, but it's the league is going farther and farther away from bump and run coverage.
Right. If you look and you get inside the X's and O's of it and to look at so much of what Vic Fangio did came out of that nickel package.
Yeah.
Bryce Callahan is one of the most – he may not be the best player on this defense. He is one of the top three most important players on this defense. I will go die on that hill if I have to. He is so valuable, and you saw that on Sunday. What he can give you at that position, you just hate to see that foot injury happen. Such a bad time for it.
Yeah.
Another guy who's having a breakout really good season – and I know there's going to be questions. You bring him back off the injury. I would take a chance on him just because I don't think – again, there's a lot of guys that can do what Adrian Amos can do in the NFL. There's a lot of guys that can give you what he gives you. I don't know how many guys can give you what Bryce Callahan can give you for the money that we're going to pay Bryce Callahan. We're not dumping a lot of money. So I think if you bring back Bryce Callahan, I think if you win that against Adrian Amos – I think it's a no-brainer, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And it's as simple as nickel blitzes and then slot coverage. Like, with the emergence of slot receivers, having a guy like Callahan who can legitimately cover any slot receiver in the league is unbelievably valuable.
Right. For how much he gets off the bus and doesn't look like the biggest dude, he can stick his nose wherever he needs to. He's very good at matching up tight ends and body position on most of those. It's unbelievable.
Yep.
I think you missed him a lot on Sunday. I am a huge Bryce Callahan guy. I think Let Me Be Frank is just a Bryce Callahan group of people. Like, we're all Bryce Callahan guys.
We're Albert Amora Bryce Callahan guys.
We are Albert Amora Bryce Callahan guys. I want to see Bryce Callahan in the orange until next season.
I agree. The next guy will go offensive line, Bobby Massey. I thought he had a great year, anchored down the right side of that line. Even when Kyle Long went out, he was still reliable. I think Chaz Leno had more of the issues offensively, with pressure and giving up sacks. But I thought the O-line was great this year, significantly better from years past. You know, gone are the days where Jay Cutler would get buried 60 times a season. Now we've got a great run game, you know, really good pass blocking, giving Mitch opportunities to make plays. And Bobby Massey's only 30. I think he had a good season, and he could be, in my opinion, a very undervalued guy in the league.
Right. I'm bringing Bobby Massey back. I'm bringing Bobby Matt. Well, say that five times.
Yeah, right.
I'm bringing Bobby Massey back. For one other reason you didn't mention, too, I do believe, and maybe this is just come from blank, the continuity that a young quarterback will develop with his offensive line, I think goes a long way. Yeah. That's some of that intangible stuff you can't measure, you can't coach it. But having Bobby Massey protecting Mitch's right side, I think for a young quarterback to have the same guy, you know what you're getting every time. He's probably at he's probably an 80th percentile tackle in this league, which we haven't had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Bobby Massey, I'd bring him back. I don't think you're gonna have to pay him that much. You're obviously gonna have to give him something, but
I think it's gonna be like $6 million again.
Yeah, I think Bobby Massey's worth every cent of $6 million. Especially with the fact you have this young quarterback, he knows they've developed a good relationship. That's what you want moving forward, right? You look at that Eagles offensive line. You look at guys like Jason Kelce, Lane Johnson.
Yep.
Those guys have now played together for years, right? That's the hope that you think this young, relatively young offensive line in 3 to 4 years could become that. There's so much continuity on that position.
Yep.
There's so much that goes into that group of five playing together. I like Massey. I hope we bring him back.
Yeah, and the other offensive lineman I had listed, Brian Witzman, he filled in for Kyle Long during the injury and kind of just played all over the place whenever Nagy needed him. He's a journeyman, 100% journeyman throughout the league. I think this is his sixth team he's been with. I don't anticipate he'd be a lot of money. I put him on there just because I thought he's a guy that went unbelievably unsung throughout the year and kind of deserved a little bit of praise.
Yeah, I think that 100% is correct. It all comes down to what they decide to do with these journeyman guys, like an Eric Kush, for example.
Yep.
Whatever they decide to do, I think it comes at who they can get at the biggest bargain, right? Which
right.
one of them would take a discount to play here? Who they think, because you know you have to weigh the fact that James Daniels has now arrived, probably keep Cody where he's at.
Yep.
You don't know what you're going to get in terms of these other guys, but whichever one of that group of two to three guys decides to take, hey, I'll stay here for a little less, or they decide, hey, you're more versatile, you can play a couple positions, which Wishman can. I think they bring him back. I would be curious to see what he's going to ask for, because like you said, older guy, journeyman guy. I don't think it would be too much, but again, there's another guy who, because he can play so many positions, helps you out in terms of depth everywhere. So I think he's worth the price to bring him back. I liked him a lot. Like you said, very undervalued guy. Did a really good job in the run game, I thought, and later in the season, especially with Long kind of still recovering.
Yep.
So that's a guy I think I would bring back as well.
And I think a piece that we didn't even touch on that's going to be huge in this is the fact that Harry Highstand is the offensive line coach and can really just turn nothing into something with like a UDFA or, you know, another journeyman type guy that they can get at league minimum. So I think that's
right,
something
absolutely.
To watch for.
Yeah, I agree. Because again, you can also value coaching continuity in the sense that we have a better coach. Maybe we can go get a less talented guy and
yep.
hope we get more out of him
yep.
with the better coach, which again, you could do that with either Whitson or Kush or whoever you decide to bring in. But yeah, that's a great point to make too. The better coach is probably going to get more out of his guys. And a guy like Whitson, like we said, versatile, can give you a lot of different things at a lot of different positions.
Yeah, the last guy on the list, Roy Robertson-Harris. I thought he had a great year on the defensive line, but there's so much depth there. Do they need to keep a guy like this, or can they go out and, you know, or do they even need this much depth on the defensive line? A big thing is we didn't have too many injuries, which was fortunate this year. But I don't know where to go
line,
on this one.
No, this defensive line, in my opinion, is going to be one of those where if you're a third or fourth guy, if your name is not Khalil Mack, Leonard Floyd, Eddie Goldman, and Akeem Hicks, come play with them, and then go get yourself
yeah,
paid.
Yeah, go get paid.
That, in my opinion, is this D-line group. Because here's what you have to realize. We're all sitting here talking about Roy Robertson-Harris had a great year, blah, 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 which he did. To
yeah.
take nothing away from him. He was awesome.
Yep.
I loved watching him play. But it's not like we all saw this coming, right? You can go get another defensive lineman that's going to play with these guys. It's going to get one-on-one matchups. No
mm-hmm.
offensive coordinator is going to talk about him in a game plan. And he's going to give you just what Robertson-Harris did. Now, I love Robertson-Harris's physicality. I think he is a monster of a dude.
He's huge, yeah.
So if you can go find somebody that size, that kind of build, I like it. But again, I don't know if you can – because again – are you really going to pay what he wants for a second-string defensive lineman, right? For a guy who's not even going to be starting, probably playing 20 to 30 snaps a game. I feel like those guys are a dime a dozen, unfortunately. And if
Nichols was great, too, and he's going to play more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If I'm Roy Robinson Harris, I'm going to try and max out what I did this year and just try and go get myself paid that, hey, I can do this for you, for another team, 40, 50 snaps a game, not right. 20, 30.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think that's a good way to look at it, because it is really just like a plug-and-play defensive line. Like, there's very few situations where you don't have two of the four of Floyd, Hicks, Goldman, and
correct.
Mack out there.
Right.
But
right. Now, the big question, I think, too, another one, the guy we didn't talk about, he's not free agent.
Yep.
Is Jordan Howard going to be a Bear next year?
I think yes. I don't think... Just given the draft capital that they have going into this year, I don't think they have enough to replace him. If they get a monster offer, they're obviously going to move him. But I don't see any team that's going to, you know, back up the Brinks truck for a guy like Jordan Howard going into his contract right. year.
Right, exactly. That's another thing that I think, too, going into the contract year thing, you got to get every ounce of him out. Right.
Yep.
You have to run him into the ground if you have to, just because you know it's a contract year and the duration and longevity these running backs have nowadays.
Yeah.
But I'm a Jordan Howard guy.
I like
him a lot. I'm an old school guy. I think we're all Jordan Howard guys. We felt like at some points in time where you're 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-2, 2nd-and-1, where there's just so much creativity and so many distractions and window dressing on offense, where you can simplify the entire thing and just say, hey, 24 has been an all pro a couple times. Let's just go get a yard.
Yeah.
Right. And I think having that in your back pocket, and I think that's something that Nagy grows accustomed to more as he has Jordan, hopefully in another year. But I think he's just too valuable of a guy. He's just such a big dude. He falls forward. He runs low. He's just so good. And I think he's an asset to have going into a contract year. And then you make that decision next year. But I hope they don't make any rash decisions and try and trade him. And unless somebody rolls out the kitchen sink, which I don't anticipate anybody doing.
Yeah. He's a bigger Matt Forte. Like, he has the patience.
Right.
He finds the holes. He doesn't rush anything. He's super, super into letting the play develop and then find where he needs to go.
Right.
But as we close up here, one last thought. I need to know, what do you think the biggest, outside of kicker, obviously, what is the one area the Bears need to upgrade going into next season?
If I had to pick one area for them to upgrade, I do think it's going to try and find a lockdown cornerback if it's out.
Yep, 100% with you.
If it's out there, try and go find it.
Yep.
You can adopt, and again, it's a college, but if it carries over the same philosophy, Urban Meyer's Iowa State team, they play man-to-man coverage 80 to 90% of the plays of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the logic of Wade Phillips is doing it right now with Khalid and Peters. If you go get guys who can just stick guys and just go lock down and take away an entire side of the field,
yeah.
Imagine what that would do with this front seven.
Exactly.
Right. Imagine if you had a lockdown corner, right? I'm not saying you go get these guys, right? But you had a Jalen Ramsey type guy, right? Or you had a Xavier Rhodes type guy.
Yep.
Who could just absolutely lock down the best receiver on the other team, then I literally don't know how a team could score 20 points in a game unless we gave them 2 touchdowns on offense.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how a team would physically be able to score with everybody we have come back in the front, with a guy like Eddie roaming in the middle of the field, and you had a lockdown cornerback. I don't know how you could score. I think it really is... Because the offense is going to take time. The offense is going to take time in the sense where you have a coach in his second year, you have this quarterback going into his third year, you're young with Tariq and Jordan, now Robinson.
Yep.
You have the guys over there. I think that just takes time. But if you can go find a lockdown quarterback, because then think about it. Kyle Fuller's your number two. He can go play bump and run coverage with the other team's number two all day long.
That's where he belongs, too. He's not a top guy.
Exactly.
He's a very good number two corner, I think.
He is a top 10% number two corner in the NFL.
Yeah.
He absolutely is that. And on his best day, he can probably contain a number one. But if you had a guy who he could just go out there and glove somebody, and you put Khalil and him on the same side of the field, you would take half the football field away with 2 guys.
Yep.
So, in my opinion, it's the only place they could go get better immediately, unless something presents itself on offense, right? Unless Le'Veon Bell or OBJ comes knocking on your door.
I think a tight end is a bigger need for him than even a receiver.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
Like, I think we have a great receiving core.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's the best receiving core we've had in a very long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, a tight end, a big body guy who can move a little bit. Like, you give Trey Burton's athleticism into Shaheen's body type guy.
Exactly.
But again, I think for me, it's corner. If you can go get a cornerback, the sky's the limit for that defense.
100%. Well, Nick, we appreciate your time. Always fun to talk Bears football, and we'll obviously be having you back on. But you can always check us out, read our writing, listen to us, letmebefrankblog.com. Have a good one, my man.
Always, brother. Take care.